Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss Skeleton Crew, currently airing on Disney Plus. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by my fellow pirates. Tony Sindelar is here. Hi, Tony.
Avast. Yeah, pirates. It's me. Hi. This is how podcasts start.
Nailed it. Kat Benish is also here. Hello.
A pirate's life is a wonderful life for sailing over the sea. Give me an ear for a buccaneer. A pirate's life is for me. Hey, a pirate's life is for me.
That's all we have time for. Good night, everybody. we are back to discuss episode 3 of Skeleton Crew. Very interesting. That's an astrogation problem.
It says astrogation?
Astrogation is navigation, but in space. Okay.
Just checking. Right along. That Merriam-Webster does think that that's a word, but it also is. The first hit above Merriam-Webster is Wikipedia. So I don't know what that says.
It's a fairly low amount of things that where Wikipedia is just one above.
I thought it was like astronavigation. In some science fiction,
astrogation is Star Wars, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, when have we heard the word astrogation before?
It's an astrodroid. The reason that R2-D2 is an astrodroid is because he's an astrodroid who does navigation.
Yeah, but they call him an astrodroid, but they never call him an astronavigation droid.
That's right, because the word is astrogation.
Do they ever use that word in
Star
Wars?
They do have a nav computer, and it's not a gation computer, Dan.
I guess that's true.
Yeah, like, name your sources. When do they use astronavigation? When do they use astrogation?
We're hung up on the fifth word of the title. This is going to be one of those long eps.
You guys are very judgy that I didn't know this word. Okay.
I think you keep saying the word judgy when we're just being jerks. I think you're taking a lot on yourself.
Wikipedia does cite.
You cannot cite Wikipedia. Oh, for Star Wars, sorry.
There is no higher source.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. The Oxford English Dictionary defines astrogation as.
In this essay, I will.
The
what if you were like a really hardcore Star Wars nerd and you're like, no, if it doesn't come from StarWars.com, it doesn't count.
It's just sparkling Wookiees. it does cite The Phantom Menace.
Ah, so, does that count as
yes,
a source?
It's canon. Anyway. Great chat, everybody.
What are we doing here, Dan?
Dan Moore's here, too.
I already introduced myself. We're past that. Okay. Mm. So, in this episode, I guess I'm doing a recap. I did start doing it. We open with the scene back on At Atten, where all the families are worried about what's going on, and there is some concern about whether or not the supervisor will be alerted to the fact that a starship took off with a bunch of kids. In particular, Wim's dad seems kind of freaked out.
Yeah.
Did you guys, by the way, see the mural in the background there?
It is a really cool, beautiful mural.
If you pull it up, there's basically, it's like a white robe figure, I'm doing this from memory, like in the background, some very sort of like angelic sort of, I don't want to say there's a halo there, but don't quote me on that. And then there's a human, the elephant, yes, I'm specious, please correct me on the correct name of that.
I don't think anybody knows, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, it is. That got updated since between episodes, which was interesting.
The one that looks like a hammerhead shark.
Ithorian.
And then some with your back to them. Which explains why on the planet, when they show up on, not Tortuga, they're like, ooh, aliens. To imply that those are the species that are basically locked into the barrier. On Atten versus those that are outside of Atten. But it's very interesting. It looks like almost like a founder's mural.
There's a little bit of it in some screenshots I'm finding on a Reddit thread. It does have the art vibe of it is kind of Rebels-ish.
Yeah, very father, son, and the daughter.
Yeah, it has a similar style to it.
There are different. So this is, they do. What I appreciate in this episode is there is a decent amount of characters basically asking out loud the questions that I think the audience has in terms of like what's going on, where is the set, who knows what about what, and so we get a little bit from the kids and a little bit of it from the parents, which, you know, it feels like basically like, well, there was back when we did the Mandalorian and people were real mad about us not really saying what the code was and what anything meant for like 2 seasons. So here it's real clear, for example, that the parents believe that they live in a republic, which they don't. Or I mean, do they? I don't know. What is the nature of government? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot happening in the background there. I did find an extensive Rebel or a Reddit thread theorizing of where Ad-Aden is based on Adlerhead star charts with circles on it, which I love.
Oh my god.
Anyway, yeah, some stuff seems to be happening back on Ad-Aden.
And it does support the theory that if there is a meet cute here, we are going to spend more time on the planet.
Yeah, I do think
we are
spending some time
with
the
parents. The parents are going to start poking around,
yeah,
maybe demand a meeting with the Overseer, and I feel like they are due for a like Wizard of Oz person behind the power. Like, what? We've been working for a droid doing like math problems for two generations for reasons we don't understand.
But they're not, essentially the droids aren't going to do anything about it because it's out of their jurisdiction. Back on Port Borgo, Jod helps the kids escape. The kids are skeptical of him, especially
right
KB.
Away.
Yep.
The viewers are too. I was like, is he really a Jedi?
He does seem to exhibit some occasionally Jedi like powers that are not really explained, but he does help them basically get out. They get all the way back to the ship and they're ready to go, but then the kids insist they will not leave without SM-33. So he has to go back in.
Because you leave, it is all everyone knows, Jedi always say, leave no one behind. No one behind. That was a really funny, cute.
It's not a Jedi thing.
I will say, I'm sure we'll talk about more later, but like, I think at the end it's revealed that Jude Law is in fact not a Jedi, though it's still unclear whether or not he has Force power. Yeah. But I will say, full credit, the acting there being like, I've set myself on this con, I'm not going to give up this con, but it's really annoying. Some really great facial acting there of... Fine, we'll go back and get your droid.
All right, because this is what we do. I did immediately start thinking like, okay, I don't think he's a Force user. I think we're going to find out that he's, you know, he's using some trickery because he's a con man. But if he was a Jedi, given when the show takes place and what his age is, assuming he's human, like, where would he be in the Jedi, you know, Order 66 timeline, etc.
Where would he be? Do we know?
So
where
this would
takes
be
place?
This series takes place at the same time period as the rest of the Mando Ahsoka stuff, which is about I think was it five to eight years after Return of the Jedi, which is itself about 4 years after A New Hope, which is itself 18 years. So that's what 20. It's about 25, 30 years after Phantom Menace. Or, sorry, 25, 30 years after Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, because Luke Skywalker is, what, mid-20s? Luke and Leia are probably mid-20s around now.
Probably about that. They're probably late 20s, close to 30, not quite, yeah.
Okay. Jude Law, 51. Yep. Looking great for 51.
Does look good.
Yeah. So he is theoretically about 20-ish years older than Luke and Leia.
Yeah.
So that pegs him at maybe around like Ahsoka age, maybe.
Would you put him at like Kanan age? Because that was kind of my thought, was that he seems like he could have been like in a Kanan Jarrus situation where he was a Padawan or a not quite fully knighted
Jedi. Seems like
Jedi.
He couldn't have been in much more than that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he could be a Force user, but he probably did not have years of service in the Jedi. His ability to have had any years in the Jedi Order or training under a Jedi Master are pretty limited just by his not being 100.
Yeah.
So
my biggest concern with that is sort of the going back to the well on the, like, we've done that with
Love
both Jedis. Kanan and Cal Kestis in the Star Wars games, who have
How
the same background, essentially. Yeah.
I would much prefer this a character in the vein of Kumail Nanjiani from the Obi-Wan series, where he is a con artist. Mm-hmm. I find that more on the Han Solo, but more of a con artist with a heart of gold, who eventually will help these kids. Mm-hmm.
That's a possibility.
Yeah.
He has to go back in to Port Borgo and sneak around. This is also the point at which we essentially have it confirmed that he is Captain Silvo, who is the from the opening scene, gets mutinied by his crew, which I'm glad they did not leave as
a
mystery. It is solved pretty quickly.
Especially since they basically introduced that, like, he's got like a third name in this episode.
Yeah, I actually kind of love that.
Well, I like the scene where he crosses paths with like,
oh, his old shipmate.
His former crewman, who's kind of sympathetic, but also like not going to put his neck on the line to protect him. Yeah, still a pirate. I did feel like it was pacing wise, like a little weird to be like, we've escaped, but now we have to send you back.
Yeah,
was a little strange, but whatever.
I thought they did it well by focusing on the kids and like,
yeah,
I love that we don't.
They could have their side conversations, basically.
Yeah, and the fact that you have to sort of imagine he had this reckless chase to get on. They don't explain how he got the ship. They're just like, happened. Everyone's firing now. It's good.
Yeah, it's fine.
I also did read a screen and article just before this talking about all the different pirate references that are in this, and I think we've already got a lot of them. But the one I didn't realize is that Silvo may be a reference to
Long John Silver. Yeah, I thought about that.
Yeah, and they also talked about the fact that his second in command, the werewolf guy,
is named Brutus.
Is it Brutus? Thank you, Brutus. But no, he has the double bandoliers, like Blackbeard is reported to do, has some like very strong Blackbeard elements.
I especially thought of the Long John Silver because in Treasure Island, doesn't Long John Silver do a whole thing where he uses a fake identity for an extended period of time?
That's right. It's been years since I've read it.
Yeah,
I think he's not a captain on the ship, and then he like reveals himself.
Right? Mm, that rings a bell.
Yeah. So
my two facts about that character that he meets in the droid shop, and we get lovely little droid cameos as Jude Law has to turn them all on and off.
Yeah.
The character is voiced by Alfred Molina. Best known perhaps as Doc Ock from the Spider-Man movies. And the character name apparently is a tip of the hat to podcast hosts from a show called The Greatest Generation, which is a Star Trek show.
Wow. Okay.
Nice.
I would not have known that except for a friend of the show, Guy English, who pointed it out. And it seems like that is the case. So maybe if we, could have a weird character named after all of us someday.
Okay. ACP would be a great droid name, right?
Yes.
Hopefully a fun little droid. Anyways, we get SM-33. Everybody gets back on board and they're going to take off. But unfortunately, there's a fuel line still attached to the ship, and it turns out to be a very robust fuel line. Eventually, they manage to break it and get away, not before it wreaks some havoc on Port Borgo.
I did like the jumping to hyperspace and Neil asking, isn't that dangerous to do
when you're still attached to something?
And I appreciate the kids didn't see the carnage, right? That was again like the audience can appreciate it, but the kids were shielded from it.
I also appreciated that after the sequel trilogy's super fast and loose, like hyperspace can do whatever, that it still felt like, okay, there's still some rules,
especially
and risks.
In this one they established that, because there's later when they're leaving the next planet, it's like, we got to get out of the gravity well or right? So it's like there are rules, basically. It would be nonsense for there not to be.
Correct.
I like that SM-33 does not like...
Yes.
What are we calling him? Because he goes by...
Smee. I would call him
Smee. No, sorry.
Jod.
What are we calling Jude Law? Because he's Jod Nanawood, which kind of sounds like a made-up name that you made up on the spot.
It's a made-up Jedi name, yeah.
Yep.
He made-up Jedi name. Random generator.
Sometimes Captain Silvo... And
we'll
later,
learn.
Crimson Jack.
Which apparently, and this is the other thing I was going to write in the article, is a like 1970s name of a like space pirate from early Star Wars lore, which I did not know.
Wow.
Yeah.
I really thought you were going to say a 1970s name that was the top 10 most popular names parents gave to their children.
No, there's this weird thing of Crimson Jack.
John, Emily, Crimson Jack.
the name existed. I don't know if it was like some sort of tie-in of a comic book. I didn't read the article too closely, but that there is a historical, pirates,
from the 70s in the Star Wars Marvel comics, which were kind of garbage.
I was going to say it had to be the Marvel comics. There was very little other Star Wars material at that point.
But I think the question
I think some of that was written before Empire, so it's like extra nonsensey. Because a lot of the media that they generated between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back is sorry, Splinter of the Mind's Eye fans, straight garbage.
Best book ever.
Okay,
I don't remember.
First of all, this character already exists in canon.
Oh, really?
Yes, canon? The non-legends. There is because the Wikipedia article opens with, Crimson Jack was a human male pirate who, during the First Order and Resistance War, attempted to claim a bounty from the First Order after discovering someone on board a Pergil-class star cruiser.
What is that from? Is it like one of those trading cards?
It's the Halcyon, so I assume it might be That's a it's a link in comic to the, I think, Galactic Star Cruiser Hotel.
Oh, okay.
That is not words I never thought I would put together.
Well, is that still canon, even though they closed the hotel?
The hotel happened. Well, I think that's the interesting question, then, is the what the article was postulating is that Crimson Jack may be similar to, the Dread Pirate Roberts?
Dread Pirate Roberts.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that lives on as a name. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, that'd be kind of cool.
I like that Smee is not interested in a new friend and has lots of questions for this guy and doesn't pick up his bowl or when he's
supposed to. Oh yeah, the bowl was great.
And then later interrogates them, but also Smee seems to have SM33 seems to have some pretty major memory loop issues.
I did really enjoy the portrayal on that one bit, right, where he comes back and just says,
"Yeah,
I also I love that Jude Law's like, yeah, I'm gonna get a knife and then look at the cool coats. I wanted him to end up in did he end up in a cool coat?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, as he should have. Those were cool coats.
Yeah.
But again, there was, what I was interested on this ship?
Because the Jod did also do kind of a, like, that ship? Like, what's going on with that ship? I was wondering if he recognized it or knew something, but then later he asks SM33, like, what's the deal with this ship? What's the name of this ship? And they So I know the name of the ship because it's the name of a Lego set.
Yeah.
But they have not said the name of the ship in the show yet.
Can you tell us what the name of the ship is?
Spoilers, yeah, it's called
folks.
Something.
I thought it was called the Ebony Cinder or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, great name.
Yeah.
Very romantic.
It is interesting, right? Because
Onyx. Oh, even better. The Onyx
Cinder.
Onyx Cinder.
We know it is they've taken pains to establish it as a pirate ship. And we know, moreover, it was a pirate ship that crashed or was
Dan, you don't
left.
Land up you don't land upside down
well you
purpose.
Could I mean what that feels like is you scuttled your pirate ship
okay
right like
what if the pirates okay here's the question
Atten is all pirates
yes
they're it all descended from pirates
but they've
like they rebelled against their pirate parents by becoming accountants and stuff.
No. It's a very, very long con. And it's like the people who the first supervisor is like the seventh generation pirate captain of
Are we
going to
find out
Cinder.
That SM33 is the supervisor, but he's on leave?
Yeah. Are you going to suggest that it's all for money, that it's a long con silver? Anyways, let's continue our recap.
Yeah, because I think they do establish, like, literally in the very first scene, the markings on the pirate ship is of the show, right? Is one of the lines. And I think they then establish in the, especially with all the ships getting dragged around by the fuel line, that basically black and white stripes is the code, is apparently intergenerational Star Wars code for pirate.
Well, we learned that the crawl has a whole bit about, right?
Yes, that was what I was saying.
Thank God we had that crawl.
Thank God I explained everything.
Thank God.
All right. So they're off to a moon to find Jod's friend, quote unquote, who he doesn't really trust. This involves them, some nice shots of them walking
gorgeous,
over the moon.
Gorgeous.
So it's like a desolate moon
with
an atmosphere. Yeah, that's
it's very Star Wars-y.
Yeah.
It's very,
very
Star
considerate.
Wars.
Yeah.
I assume they had like a dome of some sort.
No, it's just.
Nope, there's no dome shown in all the space.
No, but a dome of oxygen.
Okay, but how did the spaceship get it?
Star Wars?
Okay, thank you.
How did the ship get out of the barrier?
I mean, they showed it moving through the barrier.
This is a derivative.
Anyway,
derivative.
Well played.
Wow.
We show up at the hideout where we have the little.
This is an observatory, Dan.
Sorry, observatory with the iStock droids from Jabba's palace.
Several of them
that are all interrogating.
It was
Jod.
So weird for me them to be speaking in English or common
instead
or
of
basic.
Yeah.
Well, or, I mean, they were relaying a message instead of just being a jerky droid.
Yeah.
Right?
This is where we meet Kim, who is a little adorable owl.
Oh, my God.
I had the captions on, and so
you can tell how they spell.
The spelling of Kim is aggressively Star Wars.
I agree.
Got an apostrophe in it.
It was a
K-H apostrophe Y-double-M.
Yes. It reminded me of, like, the dragons of Kryn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same aggressive use.
This is where we learn that Jod is also known as Crimson Jack.
See previous conversation.
Kim is established to be a astronomer of some sort who can track down various locations. She basically tells her that the kids are from Atten. And she is fascinated by this and pulls out a bunch of documents and things, the star charts, and has these a couple of records that we learn about the jewels of the old Republic.
Got the lore. There were five of them?
There were several, and the rest of them were destroyed? Did they?
Yeah, they showed, they said, I think there were five of them, and all of them were destroyed except for At-Aten, which no one has seen ever again.
So they try to track down where it is.
And they use her merit badge. She uses her merit badge. Well, she describes it.
It's cloudy.
It's cloudy. And then the fact that she has a merit badge.
Where it has some writing on it.
Yeah, on her back. The writing on it is somehow significant.
So Kim is doing this, but we also know that Kim has alerted the authorities because she does not trust Jack. And so she is stalling a thing that Jod picks up on. And therefore, a bit of a fight ensues, and eventually Jod and the kids escape with
and Kim
astrogation
is fine.
Data.
Kim is fine. Very important. Kim is fine.
But the presumably New Republic shows up in some X-Wings.
Wasn't there a
kind
line?
Kind of reprising the role we've seen them in The Mandalorian.
Yeah,
kind of
like peacekeeper, police force.
Space sheriffs who will show up and like... don't get out of their X-Wings.
We did skip one of the funny lines about Alderaan of like...
Yes. Oh, you missed the war.
What war? Right, war. Yeah. So establishing once again that the kids are way out of touch.
Yeah.
So yeah, everything they know about the Jedi must really be about the literal Old Republic Jedi.
Yeah. And the kids do... get away with something, right? They've got a data chip with something on it.
Yeah, they've got theoretically the route, but I think we are going to learn is not necessarily.
I mean, I assume they don't get home next episode because this show has a lot more episodes. But yeah, they've got something that'll take them to the next something.
So they have a bit of a showdown with Jod as they're getting back onto the ship. And they basically, that's the point where we start to learn he's not a Jedi. They don't really trust him. Fern strikes a great deal. I love the great deal with him, which is like, you're going to help us, but we're not partners. You work for us.
I thought that was KB who did that.
Was that KB?
I think it was KB. I think KB shows up in this episode to be the real leader here. Yeah. She's got her head on a swivel. She's the one who gets the, pact from the owl to say like, call me if you ever need me, and she's the one who negotiates with Jude Law. They get in the ship. I will say I'm jumping ahead, you keep going.
I mean, that's most of we have a fight.
The fight scene, that's the best part of them, like the kids getting loaded up into the turrets.
Neil has to fly the ship.
Your favorite thing.
Yeah. I want to fly the ship. I do appreciate they explain later on when the X-Wings talk to, I think it's Kim or someone, that like there are kids on board, which is why they're being a little easy, so you don't just think that a bunch of like 10-year-olds beat two X-Wing pilots.
They're pulling their punches.
Also, the X-Wings don't get blown up either, which is good, because that would also be like,
that would be horrifying.
Our friends, the small children who murdered two Republic pilots just trying to do their job, right? So
We have that fun bit we alluded to where they can't go into hyperspace until hyperspace until they see the light, the sun, essentially.
I think the X-Wings are firing ion shots to try and disable. And I was like, have we seen that in live action before? I don't remember. Maybe not.
Yes, I mean, we've seen the ion cannon from Hoth.
Yes.
Back in Empire, but yes, it's not as frequently used. So we make our jump, and there's all the kids are taking a nap,
except for
KB, who points out that it's unlikely statistically to Jod that he is a Jedi, and he suggests that
that happened before.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I got a little myself out of sequence here, because there's also a scene later at one point with their having food, where Jod makes food and then eats it all in front of them.
It looks like birthday cake. It legitimately just looks like blue birthday cake.
I read a interview with Jude Law, and I kind of enjoyed him talking about this. I kind of picture Jod as a guy who didn't really have a childhood, and so he doesn't know how to deal with children, and so he's like making all this food, and all the kids just are used to having food made for them, and so he's like, I don't know what your problem is, just go get the food. Like, I'm not gonna coddle you and like spoon you out food.
I think he does a good job at playing, I mean, it's, you know, possibly deposed pirate leader, possibly Jedi, possibly, like, I mean, I don't know if he's either of those things. He could probably kill four kids and take the ship if he wanted to.
Yeah.
But he doesn't want to murder four kids.
He's got a heart of gold.
But also, maybe he doesn't want to work for four kids.
Yeah.
But also, what's the deal with this droid? And like, are there any cool coats on this ship?
There's a lot of layers.
I feel like he does a good job at being like, you know, I don't love the situation either, but I don't want to die in that prison cell.
Yeah.
And they even ask him, like, why did you wait for us? Couldn't you have gotten out whenever?
This is the thing I like the best about the kids, is the kids are not dummies, right? Like, the kids immediately tweet, because that was my question, is like, if he could levitate the keys out, he could have left at any time. And they immediately ask that question, which is great. And they are immediately, at least some of them are immediately suspicious of him claiming to be a Jedi, right?
Like, yeah, these kids are not.
They're not idiots. And I like that, because otherwise it would feel a little too easy, a little too pat for them all to be.
No, it's fun with them being suspicious and like, except, and like with Wim showing he wants an ideal hero, but everyone else being, maybe not.
Yeah. Wim, really? Yeah.
Yeah. But no, it's good. There were several laugh out loud moments for me in this episode. Alderaan, the fuel lines, like just generally the escape from Not Tortuga. I generally really enjoy the show.
I thought there was a great background bit when they first land on the moon where they're playing with the cargo hook, like the claw. They're like, Wim's like riding
on it.
I thought
it was going to go somewhere. Yeah.
I think it may go somewhere in the future, but I enjoyed that it was just like, stop. Like, it's not even in the foreground a lot of the shot. It's just like, guys, stop playing with it.
That's good. So, yeah. I'm very much enjoying the show. I have no idea where it's going. I don't know what the reviews have been. I hope they've been positive.
Yeah. So, we have some mysteries. What's up with that, Adden? We do have the scene where the kids start
Can't say I recall, Adden.
The kids start to theorize, too, towards the end.
Oh, yeah. And they think it might be the order and the fact that they're all analysts. Was that what it was?
Well, they said they're like, well, they're all analysts. And they said, what do they analyze? And they say, money.
That was them being idiots.
But there's something to the money, right? Because the money is Old Republic money.
Yeah.
So what are they doing with it? Why do they have it?
Well, why would you? You could just keep it in circulation there.
But I think my point is, I don't think you're being totally idiot about it. I mean, Wim then hides the money so that Jod doesn't know.
Yeah, but it could also just be that money they know has value. Like, it may be the money, but it also might be like, that's old money. Like I said, it's pressed platinum, so it's valuable on its own accord.
It could be. There could be something else. I mean, the great work we know is up to something.
Yeah.
And everybody seems to want the money that they think is on Adden, or treasure of what kind, we don't know. So I think there are some plausible implications there. Anyway, should we do some letters?
Sure. Yeah, let's do some letters.
Yeah, so the final thing I'll say real quick, though, is, and you mentioned it, but I do want to call it, like, the scenes where they're walking over the dunes to and from the observatory were absolutely gorgeous. Like, really had very Lord of the Rings, like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs vibes. Loved them.
It's a good looking show. If we knew anybody who worked on it, we could commend them for it.
Is that sarcasm? Do we know someone?
Yeah, we do actually know somebody who worked on it.
Yeah, Todd Vaziri.
Todd Vaziri did a lot of the VFX stuff for this.
There keeps being headlines about Neil as a practical effect, and he gets angry about it. He mainly gets angry when people talk about what's a practical effect or not, that are just speculating and stating things as fact.
Neil is clearly using CGI.
Yeah,
along
with
puppetry.
It's a combination of a lot of different stuff. It's actually really cool.
I'm sure it's very cool and very impressive, but there's definitely, like, there's probably CGI on Jude Law's, like, 5 o'clock shadow.
Jude Law has the best 5 o'clock shadow.
But I'm sure it's been enhanced with CGI. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, CGI.
No, that's all natural. That's all natural. Trust me.
Jude Law is a practical effect.
Yeah. Listener mail.
All right, listener mail. The Sane writes, wasn't the one credit the pirates found in the Corvette also from the Old Republic? Did they only recognize how valuable it was afterward?
I thought it was.
I think it's not. I think it's New Republic.
I think it has the little bird.
The starbird, or whatever you call it. Firebird? I don't remember what the term is. But yeah, I think that is current.
I know this currency is super boring Star Wars stuff, but I think there has been a little bit of a theme across the Filoni stuff of, like, there's Old Republic credits and then there's, like, Imperial script, right? Yeah. And there was stuff, like, in the Bad Batch and other places where they're, like, the money's shifting out and different money is worth different places, like in the underworld and things like that. And now we're in the New Republic, right?
Yeah.
So the ship that got hijacked or are attacked in the very first episode, was they wanted it to be carrying New Republic credit. So Old Republic credit is like way out of date. And what we talked about last episode, it is interesting that it still has value for whatever reason.
Because one would think Imperial credits at this point.
I think those are worthless. I think those are Confederate dollars.
Yeah, nobody's backing that.
Yeah, also, it again depends on the financial system. You might be able to Dan and I lived in India during demonetization. Might be a thing like where you can turn it in. Like this is legitimate things where you like have to turn in money.
I think
Kat,
you speculated last time that like maybe Old Republic credit is actually made of a precious metal, where Imperial credit is only backed.
Yeah,
up by the
I think it would,
which
have
doesn't
to
exist
be
anymore.
In order, or they're like all really big collectors, and I think it's more that it's precious metal.
They're pirates. They want gold, right? Like they're cartoon pirates. They want gold. They don't care about like
they want dollars.
Stocks.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't want.
I be investing in me IPOs.
No, so they do be not my IRA. Get it?
Yeah.
It's they so also, they it was do just writing itself, dear.
Yeah. They do not want Bitcoin. They want cold hard cash.
I do look forward to our series about the Star Wars auditors who are responsible for the currency transition post Empire.
I would actually genuinely love that.
That's
so
not going to be made, Kat. That's like 100 times less likely to be made than Star Wars JAG. Which
it's
like
it's gonna be going more. To be. Star Trek JAG will be great.
There's like pallets of Imperial credit. They're boxing
guys,
up, and
like it is very likely to be a legitimate plot point in the next Andor with whatever Cyril Karn is doing. I feel like that is what Cyril Karn does.
Oh, it's just like even more boring than that. All right. Lyle writes, grateful to have you wonderful space pirates back. I agree with all of KB's urban design and transit concerns. These are obvious signs of dystopian Sith stuff happening. Agreed that KB, parentheses, the kid, may be a Lobot type, but she also reminds me a little of our guy Echo. What if she's separatist tech and we're not just rehashing Project Necro again?
Oh, I did like seeing the battle droid. That was fun.
The Separatists would not have Republic credits, though, right? That would be antithetical.
Even
because the Separatists left the Republic. That was the whole point.
But what do they use as a
currency?
We did.
It was cool. We saw KB had, it looked like two moms in the parent meeting.
According to Wikipedia, their names are Mary and Gary.
Those sound like names that are not intended to be used for anything. Like it's like, whoops, we made action figures. We need names for these real quick. Don't overthink it. And they mentioned that like they can't track her anymore, presumably because of her,
implanted
head thing. Yeah. So,
yeah, I think it's interesting stuff. Reiner writes, I really like the rambling about Star Wars Ice Age 6.
Oh, that was us.
Totally forgot about that.
Do you also have inspiration to come up with narratives for Star Wars Stormlight 5? Kat, take it away.
Oh, my God.
Stormlight is basically, if you think about it, Stormlight, Skywalker.
I'm not going to
there's
think
a lot.
About it.
There's a lot there, is what I'm saying. It just sounds like a Star Wars surname already.
I would love to talk about Stormlight 5. Right. And the challenge is, though, like the book's only been out for 8 days. And I would hate to say anything that spoils the book for anyone who's very excited about it. It is very good. I enjoy it. But I also feel like one of our listeners wrote in, and I want to say they were from somewhere in Eastern Europe. And at one point, one of the praise they gave for the show is they're like, I have no one really to talk about Star Wars at home. So it's really nice to be able to listen to the podcast. I have that same feeling of like, I have no one as into this show as this book as much as I am. And I have no one to talk about it with. So I also listen to a podcast about this. But yeah, big sweeping epics. That's probably... I will say, though, I think there's a lot more. I would say the one thing, I don't know if anyone reads the books, there's a lot of lore and rules about how magic works. And I do feel like Dave Filoni, more than anyone, with the creation of the mythology of the father, the son, and the daughter, is the closest thing we get to like Stormlight. And even that's a bit of a stretch. But that's my... Neither of you guys have read this book, so like, we'll just stop here. It's fine.
Good news, Kat. The Stormlight was the name of a model of speeder produced by Rendel Vehicle Corporation during the Galactic War between the Galactic Republic and the reconstituted Sith Empire in the era of the Old Republic.
So is the movie then just about like a bunch of guys who are fixing it up to like race it?
It's just about car salesmen. So,
I would say more like a vanilla speeder sky, like salesmen. Bottle. Is it that's the one that's the bottle rocket or that's October Sky? October Sky.
Very different movie.
I've never seen Vanilla Sky.
Very, very, very different movie.
Oh, Bless your heart.
Oh my goodness. I have nothing. Aaron writes with a couple one. First of all, he replied, the credit they found on the ship has an Alliance starboard symbol on it, so that's New Republic. It's also a square coin where whims are sticks. Aaron also writes, hello guys, you mentioned the deleted Wampa content in Empire Strikes Back in the latest Complicated Profession episode. I want to mention, if you weren't aware, the Star Wars Trilogy arcade game from the 1990s features repeated Wampa attacks you have to stave off, including a room full of Wampas when you play the Escape from Hoth level, seemingly as a nod to that unused subplot. Love the show. Been listening since it started. Thank you all. This is where you come for your Wampa content. Your Wampent?
Wampent.
Have you guys ever played that arcade game? Or Star Wars arcade game?
Yes, but it's been a long time.
Did you make it to the Wampa level?
No. There was, I think this is the one I'm thinking of. Tony, I don't know if you remember this. Do you remember in Harvard Square when there used to be a store called Man from Atlantis?
I remember Man from Atlantis.
Yeah, it was like a shop that had all sorts of nerdy sci-fi fantasy memorabilia.
Was it in the garage?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Before the Newbery Comics or after it?
Around the same time. It later transmuted into an anime store.
Let me just put it. It was certainly, if Newbery Comics was there, it was in the era where Newbery Comics was still a music
selling
store.
Music and comics. Yes.
I made that. This is the content folks want of like, what stores were on Harvard Square
in 95 years ago? Right?
Hey, middle-aged men, can you tell us about places that you bought stuff 30 years ago?
That wasn't eBay.
Yes, we can.
Anyway.
Let me tell you about taking the T downtown to buy magic cards.
There was a
We went to MIT to go to the anime club.
There was an arcade cabinet in that store that had Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi as separate games, and they all were, it was weird because they were all different styles of games. Like, I remember the Return of the Jedi stuff was like, there was like a level where you were on the speeder bikes, but it had like nothing to do with, like, each game when you played it, it was just different set pieces and they had totally different mechanics and totally different, like, things you were doing. So I think that's the one I'm thinking about. If that's correct.
You just bring back to me that, like, I think I've even mentioned this podcast. I think it was in sixth grade and I spent an entire lunch period arguing with my friend Adam Haley that the premise of the Rogue Squadron game was stupid because the idea that Wedge Antilles would crash on Kessel was outrageous and in no way could be the foundation of a video game. That was the entire, I'm so sorry. That was not a good, argument.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, they're apparently a lot to unpack there about Wampas. The Sane also writes, he's got a checklist for us. A ship, check. A mystery island, check. Special gold coins, check. Mm-hmm. Space Tortuga, check. Blank Jack, check. This really is Pirates of the Caribbean in space with kids.
Do you think...
I like, it's not just Pirates of the Caribbean, which I think, you know, and I don't know. I feel like I'm maybe neutral on Pirates of the Caribbean, but certainly seems to be like our...
modern pirate franchise.
It's certainly the biggest, most prominent, successful pirate media thing, right?
Of the last, certainly of the last years. 20
years. I will say, I think there are,
Are you going to say Muppet Treasure Island?
Yeah, I think Muppet Treasure Island, unfortunately, has gotten pushed out. And I said 20 years, right? And Muppet Treasure Island's from
Dan
the 90s.
Dan said 30 years, yeah. So that's where I was like standing up for them.
I think there's a little bit of Muppet Treasure Island energy in there, / Treasure Island in general. There's a little bit of Hook from Peter Pan.
Yep, agree.
And there is some significant, and this is part of the Lucas DNA, there's a significant Monkey Island DNA.
Oh, I don't know Monkey Island.
And yet somehow we maintain our friendship. I mean, like, despite this.
Is it a good show?
They're video movie? Games.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I'm not even joking.
No, it's okay.
They're classic point-and-click adventure games.
They're classic point-and-click. There was a bunch of them. Some of them are much better than others. If you were a child in a specific era that I was and had access to a computer, they were very exciting. If you were born even a couple of years later, they were not. And so that's fine.
But
they were developed by LucasArts.
They had a very specific, so LucasArts, which was previously Lucasfilm Games, and they had a specific kind of goofy pirate trope to them that I think is present in these in the Skeleton Crew, right?
And it's
basically an embracing that, like, pirates are cool, but also, come on.
Yeah, right? No. And that's gonna say I was like, and One Piece 2, I think, is also coming now over the other probably big pirate franchise. I don't think it's gonna happen, but I would be so ecstatic if at some point Tim Curry made a cameo.
I don't think Tim Curry is in any shape to be making cameos these days, unfortunately. But
is he retired? I don't know.
He is, I think, long retired and or possibly ill.
Okay.
To the point of not working. That's but I will say, as crossover goes, Tim Curry did at least provide the voice of the Emperor in some of the Clone Wars, as I recall, before he was later replaced.
Really?
That is weird.
I think he was later replaced because he got sick. And that, I think Sam Witwer stepped in and started doing it instead, because Sam Witwer can apparently do anything.
Okay. Apparently, Tim Curry did a lot of voice work, because I would think that would be kind of slumming it for him. But,
oh, yeah. He was in Gargoyles, I want to say.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, I think
Severus,
some people...
That's right. Yeah.
Some people like doing voice work, and,
I don't think it's going to happen, but that would be my dream, because, again, I do... Muppet Treasure Island is one of my favorite movies of all time. But I'll go back to the listener mail and cue Dan up before we go down the gargoyle rabbit hole.
I'm going to correct myself quickly. Curry became the voice of Chancellor Palpatine / Darth Sidious upon the death of Ian Abercrombie, who is the original voice in Clone Wars. But I think he then himself got replaced at some point. So there you are then. That is it. That's all I have for mail. If you'd like to send something in, you can reach us on Mastodon at acp@zeppelin.flights. You can email us at acp@theincomparable.com. Share your theories, ask your questions, bring up your totally unrelated topics. We've heard it all.
We're here.
All I've got. Anything else that we wanted to discuss before we wrap stuff up?
No. It's a fun show.
If you want to a Perkle and Squiggs shirt, you can go to our Cotton Bureau shop and get one. I think I will be discontinuing it soon, so I can put something new in that limited spot.
Wow, limited
or whatever.
Time.
I don't know. High we'll pressure or not?
We need a Skeleton Crew shirt. Do we have any good? Well, have we done anything worth?
No.
We've said nothing interesting.
Okay.
No.
Wow.
Let's keep doing shows, though. How many episodes are in this? Eight episodes? Does that sound right?
I think for Skeleton Crew? Right. Yes, there are eight. So this week's, I should have mentioned this week's episode, as last week's was directed by David Lowery, aka the director of The Green Knight.
Great movie.
Next week's episode, which we do not know the title of, is The Daniels. We did Everything Everywhere All at Once. So your guess is as good as mine what that episode looks like.
Yeah.
A lot of bagels.
Michelle Yeoh.
Michelle Yeoh would be some amazing. She's busy doing Star Trek, so probably not.
We'll finally get the crossover we've all wanted and we all deserve. But no, I'm enjoying this. It's fun. I like it. It's lighthearted. It's good. It's good Christmas time, holiday time material.
Family friendly fare.
Yeah.
Life day.
Life day for everybody. It's coming up. Only 10 more days to do your life day shopping.
Kazook.
Kazook. All right. Well, that wraps us up for this week. We'll, of course, be back next week to talk about episode 4 of Skeleton Crew. But as always, I'd like to thank everybody out there for listening, especially our members. If you'd like to support us in this holiday season, go to theincomparable.com/members. You can sign up for a membership. You can choose which shows get your support. When you do that, you get access to lots of great features, including bootleg episodes that get released before they're edited, special content exclusive to members, access to our member Discord, and some fun extra swag. So go check that out. We really appreciate it. Thank you to all our members. And thank you from me to my co-hosts, as always. Tony Sidlar, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Kat Benish, always a pleasure.
It was fun. Yo ho ho, and a bottle of blue milk.
Delicious. Thank you, everybody out there. We'll see you next time. But until then, may the Force be with you.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members.